So good morning. I'm Vanessa. I'm the director for the Community Services Department, and every year I come to your retreat and kind of give you an update on what we're working on. Today what I wanted to do is give you a presentation that we're going to actually get to the new county councilors that come on board, so Councilor Blom and Councilor Clearing. So you're going to actually see exactly what they're going to be receiving on February 10th. And then I'm going to talk to you a little bit about some work that my department's working on, but also some we've been asked as county departments to help implement the new charter to help our new council, our new board focus on policy types issues that impact our departments, and so that they can let the county manager move to operational kinds of things. So our orientation has changed a bit. So at our last retreat, if you remember, you guys actually helped us with some mission and vision and some value statements. So what you're going to see today, because we actually went out to all of our advisory boards and got some feedback, and we have, and Ryan and I are going to come up next and talk about the theory of change strategic planning work that we're doing, is what we've come up with, what the final mission, vision, value statements are. So this is our new mission statement, and we didn't have a vision statement before. So I want to thank you guys because you participated in that for our department. And as you can see, and I'm going to go through our programs because our department is quite complex and it's different. Each programs are kind of different. But we are the main human service, social service department for the county, okay? These are the values that the staff came up with. And much debate, much conversation amongst with advisory boards, but also amongst staff. And so this is the agreement that we came in. It was a joint agreement amongst all of our staff about what we believe in and what our values are. We did not have values for our department in the past, but we believed that we should have some values. And this is what we came up with. I'm not sure if Ryan, are you going to be covering some of this, but I don't want to get into too much that you're going to be covering into. So we went through some major transitions. I started at the county in this role in October of 2007. And since then, we have gone through some major changes. One of the things, when I came on board, we had 108 staff. We're actually down to 53. I'll go to that. But we did that as strategic ways of dealing with the budget cuts coming. We had never had to lay off any staff because of the decisions that we made as a department. We had 18 managers, we're down to 5. I don't have a department deputy director, we have a flat organization, and every one of my managers can step in when I am out of the office. So we decided we're going to work smarter and be more efficient and use lean practices to help us adjust to any kind of changes that come from the federal, state, or county level. One of the things we wanted to do was we had a weatherization program in our department. It's really a construction contract that works with low-income individuals. And we wanted to try to work to see could we move it over to community development, because they had a sustainability program as well. So we did that in 2012. As you all, the biggest change was the regional support network was first merged with Cowlitz and Skamania County, created Southwest Behavioral Health, and then we all went to early adopter, which I'll talk more about. But what that did was, that was the biggest change to our department. And what we did was help most of those staff in that mental health program get jobs in Southwest Behavioral Health, but it also reduced some other staffing within our department. And another big fundamental change that just happened in April was the implementation of early adopter for full Medicaid integration. A reminder, Clark and Skamania County is the only region in the state who went this way in April. And basically, we have already moved the mental health program out, but we also managed the outpatient chemical dependency programs for the state. That ended, regardless of what you did, that ended for counties to do that on March 31st. So that's just to let you know, we had some retirements, and we just chose not to fill behind some of them, but we anticipated some of these big changes. I had hired a consultant a couple years ago, and what he said is, if you're going to work and think about how to reduce, do it when big major changes happen. So when someone retires, that's when you take a big and make a big change in your department and stuff like that, to be less disruptive. Just currently, this is our situation. We have 53 full-time FTEs. Our budget right now, we just finished it up for the biennial. If you have followed the county budget decision, we have a $56 million budget. We're about 7% of the total county budget, and about 65% of our funds are in contracts to the services. So we don't do a lot of direct services, and I'll go through our programs, but we primarily contract with nonprofits, for-profits, and city governments and housing authorities to do a lot of our work. This is a breakdown of our budget, and as you can imagine, we get the biggest bulk of the budget is from the state and the federal government. We get some general fund, very small general fund, like 4%, and then we have some taxes and fees that we get. So we have a very complex budget that we, our staff have to, we have to almost operate like a nonprofit because we have a lot of restricted funds and there's certain like limits and admin that we have to, we can only use. So we're not like the rest of the county departments. We don't, we're not a general fund department. We have to operate like a nonprofit would operate. I'm gonna go over the behavioral health program. It used to be called the alcohol and drug program. We're going with the way the language is moving with healthcare reform. And so the words behavioral health encompasses substance use disorder and mental health treatment programs. And currently what we now do is we manage the local funds for the county. So the 1/10 and 1 cent sales tax, the mental health millage property tax. And we do, our main, what I want to talk about here is the, we do some local fund, we do some treatment for this, but we have a youth house program. We don't have a big youth program, but we do have youth house. And in that, you have the youth commission. We have Teen Talk, which is a peer-to-peer support service. It's a call center. Stacia, which is a prevention program. And the Safe Communities Task Force is a youth violence to try to help kids stay out of the gangs. The other kind of programs that we fund, these are different programs that we actually fund. Some of them are recovery-oriented, some of them are treatment-oriented, but we really support the criminal justice system. We provide the treatment for those folks that are in the criminal justice system that for some reason do not or not have any insurance, not on Medicaid, private insurance, whatever. And if the court mandates some treatment, we make sure that they're in treatment so they don't end up in jail. Okay, so we do a lot of that. But these are just some different programs that we actually fund through those local 1/10 and 1 cent sales tax. Estimated budget is up there, state and federal. And again, right now, our biggest budget in behavioral health is the local funds. So that's actually flipped where our biggest part of the budget was used to be state and federal. Now it's the local funds. We're not the only department that get 1/10 and 1 cent sales tax. Actually, the sheriff does, Department of Health does. Juvenile justice does, the courts do. We're just one of the funders in our departments that get some of that particular funding. And one of the things that we're trying to do is we'll move to more outcome focus to show the community, our counselors, elected officials, that our programs are effective and they have some outcomes. So not just talk about outputs, how many people we serve, but actually what are we doing with these funds? So that when they start looking, making hard decisions, we hope that they want to continue with the particular funding, okay? So as you can imagine, the Access to Recovery is a federal program. We have been extremely successful in this. State actually sends a lot of people down to our county to train providers, and the federal government likes to send people to come when they do audits to just show them how effective this program could be. And so this is a program that has shown a tremendous success for people that are in recovery coming out of drug and alcohol treatment.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
I'm looking at your line for every dollar invested in treatment, taxpayers save at least. Can you explain a little more about how you know that amount?
So this has been studied by DSHS. And so when, I think his name is Dr. Mancuso, when the legislature would invest in any kind of drug and alcohol treatment, you know, they thought it was people making bad decisions. And so they didn't know if they should invest that money. So he would study constantly. If you invest in drug and alcohol treatment and different kinds of services, then you are saving the community in the healthcare, the criminal justice system, the housing and homeless system. So he's basically saying if you invest in treatment, you're saving taxpayers on the other end, $7.46.
And he's found a way to measure that.
He has, from his studies, Dr. Mancuso has. Now, what he needs to do now is study mental health and drug and alcohol in the larger right. healthcare system. Okay, so, but these are studies that he did when he had, I don't know if any of you remember Ken Stark with DASA, but they had lots of studies that they would show to the legislature. So we didn't do that. We're following state studies. And then, and there's also federal studies probably that also will show that, especially for the criminal justice courts. Youth involved in program and youth house, again, we have a lot of volunteers that participate because we don't have a lot of staff in that program. So we have a lot of adults and youth themselves. It's really a youth development type program, so trying to show them leadership, but also help them get engaged back to the community. And they do a lot of work with our counselors and our county manager. Again, these are programs that Michael manages, and many of you, I'm not going to go too much into the community action, you know that, but we also do the federal community development block grant and the home investment. We have one of our advisory boards, the Urban County Policy Board. This is one of our biggest programs in our department is Michael's programs. His programs are mostly federal and state, so very complex, but he also does have some local programs. Again, housing assistance, so the deed recording fees, consolidated homeless. So We are responsible for the 10-year homeless plan. We work in partnership with the Coalition of Providers. Every county needs to come up with a homeless plan and basically determine what are your strategies to address some of the requirements that are coming from the state and the legislature, but also our local community to reduce homelessness. And so this is part of that. We also do the Veterans Assistance Fund and the Injured Assistance, which is part of the CAP agency. Again, some program outcomes from his particular program that we are trying to continue to track, but these are outcomes that, from my understanding, continue.
2015.
Yep, 2015. Uh-oh. There we go. One of the programs where we actually do direct services is the Clark County Crisis Services. So this is, if you think about when you call the police, or you send somebody to the emergency room because you have a family member or a friend or somebody who is having a mental health crisis. They're gonna hurt themselves or somebody else. These are the staff that actually go out and do the evaluation. And then they try to determine, should you be detained or can they actually get you into some kind of services? And so we manage that for the county. It's a unit of, I think, 21 staff, but it is one of the few direct services that my department does. They have to follow the laws. And it's very complicated. And a lot of people like to ask as well, if somebody won't get some help, can't you just, detain them? No, people have choice. And so unless they meet the requirements followed by the law and the courts and the judges agree, we can't really detain people against their will. There is a new one coming up called Ricky's Law, which is similar for drug and alcohol system. So that will be phased in next year. But again, these are some of the things that we try to work on and focus on. We are funded through Beacon Health Options, which is the Behavioral Health Administrative Service Organization. Developmental Disabilities Program. So this is a program that we provide. We are contractors to the state, Department of Social Services. You do not have to be low income to be in this program. You just need to, and it's not an entitlement, so there's a lot of waiting lists here. But you do work with the state. The state does a lot of the case management. We do the work to help the adults find employment. And then we work with babies to three to actually get you connected to some services. So this is one of our programs where you start as a baby and you will stay till you die. And again, you do not have to be low income to be in this program. But again, we are working in joint in partnership with the state in delivering these services. I will say we have done excellent and have received awards in placing people into employment. And I'm not talking about, jobs that are less, they're not even worth trying to hire. Peace Health is a big hire. Grocery stores, counties, cities do quite a bit of hiring. We actually have somebody in our department. So our goal is to try to help them be included in the community and find them some meaningful work. Oh, I'm doing something wrong here. So I want to talk to you about policy statements. Let me make sure I didn't. Yeah, policy statements. So again, this is things we're going to talk to our counselors about, which are important for our department that they should consider. So one of the things is support the use of 110 sales tax funding for community-based support. One of the dynamics that's going on with counties as they're losing general fund from property taxes or sales tax or whatever, they're starting to look at other funds to pay for staff. And I understand the dilemma, but what happens is you take away from money from services. And so what I'm asking them to do is to be considerate, and we're going to use these needs assessment data to help them understand the need in the community. And I get that we want to make sure staff are in different departments, and we want to balance that. But we don't want to take so much away from services that to hire staff at the county that we don't have the money for the services. So that's something I need to talk to them about. The other thing is the creation of more permanent supportive housing for people who have behavioral health treatment needs. So the Community Foundation of Southwest Washington did a needs assessment for behavioral health, and one of the number one things that came up was housing. And you saw that from the needs assessment as well. So that is becoming high from a lot of needs assessment is needing to have the support for some kind of permanent type of support, but not just any kind of housing. You need to have some treatment, some care coordination happening at the housing. We had a bit of an issue with our levies that support our Veterans Assistance Fund, Developmental Disability, and Mental Health. So what I need to remind them is we would like for them to stay in compliance with the intent of the state law. So again, as a strategy for them to kind of fill the plug, the hole for general fund, they made some decisions that they would kind of cap us at a certain area and then take the extra. So help me, Brian. I'm not saying it right, but.
What they were doing is they were trying to, historically what Clark County has done, which most counties have very complicated with property taxes, but it's not focusing on a particular number, but as we get new construction in the county and we grow, that as if you base things on a rate, that we're going to be slowly getting a little more money in various funds for veteran developmental disabilities and mental health services. And what they were trying to do is to kind of flat fund that or talk about it, about the idea of holding it to a certain amount of dollars as opposed to focusing on the rate of assessed value. Fortunately, I think we've come to a point where they've agreed that they want to align themselves with our historical standards and other counties and kind of focus on that rate. Because as we grow, the whole intent of that law was that it would nudge all counties along to providing a little bit more dollars for human services. That was the intent of that. And we just want to make sure that they're wanting to stay on that same road of keeping with that. So we go ahead and revisit that.
And we don't ask for a lot of general fund for our program because we know a lot of people are you know, pulling at those dollars. But we rely on these types of funding for our programs. And so when they start to take from those types of programs and put them back into general fund, then you impact the services that we need for the community. And then the biggest thing, which I'm pretty sure Michael has talked to you about, is the issue with the sunset date for the recording fees. So we know that there's going to be some advocacy this coming session. This is something you guys probably want to consider, is that we need to either remove that sunset date or get it extended. And if we don't, we will have a huge loss in funding for our homeless programs. I mean, we almost can't do anything with our homeless funding programs if that happens. So it's a decrease in about projected 62%. We use a lot of that money to fund the shelters, to fund rental assistance, outreach, lots of different types of programs. But we need our council, we need you to support and go into the legislature. Because right now, their biggest thing in Olympia is going to be K-12 education and then followed by mental health. But we can't have them forget about this. They need to think about that because housing is a big issue across the state. The other thing is, and you have this in front of you, is a one-pager where when we moved into early adopter, one of the things we asked for was when the RSN gave back their reserves, the Regional Support Network, we sent back $30 million. We asked for half of that back so we can do some specific initiatives to address gaps in services. Well, the legislature decided, well, I want to say this, the governor and the House supported giving us back the funding. The Senate, there was some hangs up in the Senate. And anyways, they only gave us back like $1.5 million, and they specifically made it for crisis services. So that didn't really help us. So one of the things that we had NAMI sponsored a public forum back in April, we pulled together Senator Rivers, Senator Cleveland, Representative Harris, Representative Wiley, and Chair Bolt and Commissioner Brong from Skamania, and we talked about this and how we were disappointed. So they asked us to come together quickly and put up a legislative proposal. So we did, and I chaired that group, and we came up with that document that you have in front of you. Is one of the biggest things that's missing in our communities and missing across the state, period, is to have like these centralized crisis triage stabilization kind of retention kind of centers. And basically, to just give you an example of how we're lacking in our community, we only have 3 stabilization beds for adults. We have nothing for children. And Columbia River manages that. And basically, they're full all the time. So as you can imagine, we have no place to put people. We send people out of the region quite a bit, because we have Telecare, who does our evaluation treatment center for adults, and they have 11 beds, but they only average filling them at 7. So as you can imagine, those are full all the time, so we send them out of the region quite a bit. The other thing is with the Rickey's Law, with detention for people who have substance abuse disorder and are about to hurt themselves or somebody else, we have no place to put them. So you need a secure detox facility. There exists none in this state. So we're going to try to go after a 16-bed secure detox for that. We need to have a recovery focus in this center so that it's welcoming, so people don't feel like they're being punished for being sick. We want to have some housing and homeless providers there who can also engage people who may be homeless. We also want to have outpatient behavioral health providers there to figure out how can they get them into the outpatient services. We want to do our crisis mobile outreach will be operating from there. We want to have some primary care somehow located there to do some connection back to the primary care setting So that's kind of our goal with this center, is that we want to do this centralized place, because one thing I'm hearing is people don't know how to access the services. So this could be a way into accessing those services. It's also a way, you know, our Clark County Sheriff said, if they showed some kind of, I can't remember the percentage, but they've had from their arrests of misdemeanor for people who are suffering from behavioral health disorders, they feel like, and I forget the percentage of where they can, is it on there?
17%.
Yep, 17% from 2015 that they could have diverted to this diversion place instead of arresting them and taking them to jail, and they would estimate it saving them close to $712,000. The other thing is the Peace Health looked at their emergency room. From people that go to the emergency room with a behavioral health disorder, they also think they can save up to $1.4 million and had diverted over to such a center instead of having to deal with them in the emergency room. So there's savings in other kinds of systems if we actually are able to successfully get this funded. We asked for $18,750,000. The governor put us in his budget, capital budget, for $15 million. Our goal is to keep that, at least that. So now we have to work with our delegation, our legislators, to fight for that in the capital budget. There are lots of requests in there, and we know somebody's not going to get funded. So that's one of our biggest things we'll be working on, besides the recording fees, is for my department's legislative work for the next session. The other thing is we're all constantly, it's not just us, but Department of Health as well, constantly trying to educate county counselors, but also county management team, about decisions that they make around budget and how that impacts non-general fund departments. So again, we have limited amount we can take for admin. We have, you know, a certain amount of money that we can bring in. So when they make decisions around how they're going to buy IT systems or benefits, if it's not in our budget, then we have a problem. So a lot of times what they have to do is give us what they call admin subsidy just to pay them back to be able to do some of that stuff. So we're just wanting to educate them that you do have about three or four departments who are not general fund, who do not operate like general fund departments. So that's just an educational piece. And then the other two things that we're going to be working on that I didn't put up here, but the counselors have put, one's a counselor initiative, one's my department initiative. So I'm on the board for the statewide Washington State Community Action Partnership, which is all of the directors from the community actions. I'm on the board. I'm the vice chair of the board, or second vice chair of the board. I represent the public CAPS, and that's Clark, Snohomish, and Pierce County, and the rest of nonprofits. And one of the things that we're tackling, this is going to be on our legislative agenda as well, is healthcare reform and how do the housing, homeless, emergency providers, social service providers, which are many of them, get engaged in some of this healthcare reform stuff? How do they provide that support services to this population as we move to integration? So we've created a healthcare committee. I'm chairing that. And so our goal is to work with the Medicaid waiver that the state just got approved from the federal government, which will have a housing, a supported employment initiative, a supported housing initiative. It will have an initiative for long-term care. And then there's a community group called the Accountable Community Health, the Regional Health Alliance, which is supposed to work on different issues around prevention, integration of care. They will also get some funding. So I'm sharing that on behalf of the community action agencies. So just to let you know that we're trying to work on that. But two is we're looking at an equity lens. We're trying to ask ourselves, how are we making sure that our program and services are reaching all of the populations, not just a specific group of people? And so we're getting some training. And so statewide we're getting training, but I'm also working with our managers to get some training on how do you use the tool, equity lens tools, to look at your programs. And we're a funder. So we need to be figuring out how do we get trained to, how do we work with our providers to make that make sense. So that's an initiative, diversity initiative, that I've got for our managers for 2017. And then the county is doing priority-based budgeting. And so the counselors actually have a work session tomorrow in the morning around what is priority-based budgeting. This is important for us because whatever criteria that they create and any of our funding that is funded by local funds will start getting rated on, is it a priority? And if it's bottom of the list, it may not get funding. And so we went into that process this past budgeting cycle, and we had some good strategies for the cuts we had to make, But one of my programs was on the list that they initially were thinking about cutting. So we were able to stop that. But in the future, we have to think about, and I think I heard a conversation earlier about how do you have conversation with the county counselors about the importance of these programs. And you're right, what gets dominated is the Growth Management Act and realtors and fees and development. That's what takes up a lot of the county counselor's time. But if you don't think about the departments that actually serve the people, we will get left out and we will be at the bottom of some of those priority decisions. So it's one thing I want to make sure you're aware of, is something the county is considering and moving towards. And we really, Department of Health, myself, we really need some advocacy to make sure people understand is that departments that serve people also need to be considered a priority as well. And that's my presentation. Yes.
Is there any specific things that the board can do to advocate for our programs that you would like to see them do?
Yes. So right off the bat, I would like for you not only to state legislatures, but the county council to help them understand they need to support this. Previous board was not supportive of this. We
really
need to,
I don't think they really understood it.
No. But they thought it was an attack tax that shouldn't be used anymore. They let it go away. we need this for our services. They've studied to see if there's other ways to raise revenue for the housing homeless, and they haven't come up with it. And so Washington Low Income Housing Alliance is taking the lead on this. But it would be good for the community to let the county board know, as well as your letting the state legislators know, this needs to, you need to continue with this funding. Okay.
So
yes,
is that funding, the recording fees go 100% to the homeless crisis response?
So basically, yes. So the way it works out is, you know, whenever you do a real estate transaction, it's about $58 goes towards second recording fees. Of that $58, 60% stay local and goes to the homeless crisis response system, and it's issued by a county. 40% goes up to the state and comes back in the form of the consolidated homeless grant dollars, and which also goes to the homeless crisis response system. So, so 60%, stays local, and the rest, minus an admin, minus administrative burden that the state has, also comes back to the county.
But the 60% stays in crisis response and doesn't go into general.
Correct.
That's part
yes.
of our community
Correct.
Funds.
Yeah.
And the levies that go to those specific areas, do they include
the levies,
any housing stuff?
Oh, okay.
The mental health does.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the veterans health with rental assistance.
Yeah.
But those are not in... Generally, those aren't directly part of the homeless crisis response system,
right.
In terms of, so access to that rental assistance, access to that housing is not going to come through the Housing Solutions Center, the coordinated entry, the coordinated assessment and entry system. They may come references from Community Services Northwest or Lifeline, people who are receiving treatment, and that's the nexus to their housing. It isn't the fact that they're homeless.
And I would say the other initiative that we're working on, which isn't a policy statement, but it's something you should be aware of, is one of my top goals for 2017-2018 is to increase capacity of that permanent supportive housing for people with BML disorder. So we're working with the Housing Authority, and what's Chris Hansen's nonprofit?
Columbia Nonprofit Housing.
So they're looking at, they have one project that we're going to actually help fund. It's called Merriweather. It's 30 units. It's working with Columbia River and, Lifeline and Community Services Northwest. There will be treatment on site, but it will be for individuals who have behavioral disorders that are with those treatment providers. That will hopefully be next fall or winter, will be available. People can move in. We're also working with Lincoln Place and working with Community Services Northwest to hire a behavioral health specialist. So we're partnering with the health plans so that they can jointly fund somebody that can be there from 7 p.m. to 2 a.m. Monday through Sunday so that you can help divert people from having to go to jail, being called 911, ambulance being called. So help to de-escalate situations and train staff on how to de-escalate situations and engage people and hopefully get them signed up for treatment or on Medicaid, because 30 people live there, only 10 are on Medicaid. So as you can imagine, all of them are eligible, but trying to get them to follow through the process has not been easy. And then there's another one the Housing Authority is doing called Rhododendron. And that's, how am I saying?
Rhododendron.
I never say that right. And Columbia River is the provider for that one. I think that's 30 units as well, isn't it? And there's a partnership. We actually wrote a letter of support so they could get some money from the Department of Commerce for that. So we're trying to do some more on that. Yes?
What about the Daybreak Youth Center in Rushford?
We gave some funding for that. And so they actually are going to open up, I want to say, May. We actually have a call with them next week.
I thought it was earlier than that.
I thought it was too.
They had some delay, so they sent us a letter and said there are some things that they. So there's a call next week with us and them and Healthcare Authority Tuesday to go over some things. But they sent us a request and said they were not quite.
I believe that's the only unit like that in the state of Washington?
No, there's some others, but she's centralized stuff. So she's trying to do evaluation treatment center, residential, and outpatient. And particularly that model, no, doesn't work. But there are residential outpatient and ENTs elsewhere in the state.
With the changes going on with healthcare and the more that systems are starting to align, right, between homeless services and mental health, behavioral health, is your department or any of your programs going to be able to access any of that healthcare funding?
So, no, in the sense, and we actually don't want to, because there's, and Bridget understands, there's quite a bit of strings and reporting attached to a lot of that funding.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, where we're at is we're partners. Mm-hmm. And so we're trying to leverage the funding we have with that funding. So we've created a behavioral planning council where the managed care organizations, counties, behavioral providers, some consumer representatives are on there. And we're doing planning on how do we take these resources and leverage them and spread them as much as we can to fill some of the gaps in services. So we don't necessarily want to go after the direct funding. We want providers to do that. But our role is more of a partnering and coordination, actually maybe funding some things that you can't pay for out of that funding. The other thing, yes, go ahead, Bridget.
I was just looking at the Crisis Stabilization Center and wondering if that's competing for funds with these other areas, like, you know, that's a large financial ask, and yet the one above, the document recording fees, is an ongoing amount of money that we need. Do we run the risk of...
So no, because what we were told to do, and we wisely decided this, is we chose not to do a request from the operating budget. Because of what you're talking about.
Yeah.
So our request is the capital budget. So one of the things we'd like for you also to support, because it also helps people that are in the homeless system, because a lot of them are dealing with behavioral health issues, is to also advocate with legislators. The county council is on board with this, to support keeping the capital request. Now, the managed care organizations and Beacon Health Options will pay for the services for this through their funding they get. But we want to build this in our community. You know, some people may say, well, there's a Unity project in Portland. The problem is we can't send our behavioral health over there unless they become licensed in Washington as a behavioral health agency. And we definitely can't send our ITAs over there. So that's wonderful if you have private insurance and Medicare if they take that. But for our Medicaid population, we're not able to utilize that particular center. And then anytime we have run into issues with our county counselor, and I believe it will be different. I hope we have a new board. I believe we do. Who are going to come in differently, thinking more strategic. But when we need some advocacy to continue to keep our funding for our programs and our services and the population we serve, we always need our advisory boards to help us make that point to our county council.
Well, I would just like to say, too, I think most of us would agree, if there are specific things that you got, that staff need us to go and talk with county counselors about, please do reach out to any of us, because I think we'd be happy to.
Thank you.
Absolutely. I do have one more quick question that we do have to get rolling. As far as permanent supported housing for folks with behavioral health treatment needs, I'm sure it's been well thought out. But I guess I'm wondering, someone has, let's say, an attempted suicide or something that's a one-time life event. does that mean that we want to get them into a permanent supportive housing, or is that more intended for folks with longer-term behavioral health needs?
So when I talk to the behavioral health providers, and again, this is adults, what they're saying is they have a population that are in recovery, stabilized on their meds, that they feel could be really good in these housing programs, especially if you provide that care coordination and that support, and you provide some peer support on site and some treatment on site, they would be good. A lot of what happens is they get them stable, you know, chicken or egg. If you get them stabilized, they don't have no place in the housing, homeless, and so they become unstabilized. Or how do you get them in treatment when they're housing homeless? So it's not intended for people who need probably inpatient. That's the reason for the red stabilization beds and some residential kinds of programs that are not meant to be permanent. And those are paid for out of the health plans and Beacon Health Options.
So would it be in the sense, like, let's say clients are getting ready to leave a long place and they are looking for permanent housing, would that be along what the lines is of that, is finding and creating more housing, because I know that, there's just not, there's a hard for them to find. As a former employee there, I had a hard time finding them places to move to, and a lot of them left homeless, and that breaks your heart, because they're there to recover, and if they go back out of the situation that they were in, that's just, it's going to
Cycle. But it's not meant for folks who have gone through a depression once, let's say.
If you are in treatment with any of those providers, Columbia River, Lifeline, or Community Services Northwest, and they believe you need housing, they can put you in the housing. They're going to work with the housing authority to put you in the housing. But it's not meant, it's not like like any other kind of apartment. So people who don't have behavioral health issues can go in there and rent. It's meant, it's a specialized program to address that.
Okay.
So, very cool. There was the whole political issue around Columbia River, the apartment block that they had, that they were selling, et cetera. And it was like Columbia River had bought into this model of supportive housing, but really wasn't a housing provider. And therefore, so the new plan for supported housing separates those functions of the mental health provider from operations of the housing. Is that right?
Yes. I mean, that's the model I'd like to push, is let the housing developers do what they do best, and that is to develop, manage, and operate O&M for housing, and let the behavioral health providers do what they do best, is treatment. But we still have some behavioral health providers who want to buy housing and operate them. But I think there's eye-opening experiences from that, is if you don't have good O&M budgets, that could be quite expensive. Thank you.
We really do need to move along, but Vanessa, thank you so much. Very informative. I really do appreciate it. Excellent. So we would love to welcome Ryan. Is it Triglong?
Triglong.
And John, both of you, we're delighted to have you, and they're looking forward to all the good stuff you're going to share with us.
All right. Well, again, my name is Ryan Triglong, and I'm one of the financial analysts in the Department of Community Services. So the funds I work with from a financial perspective are the Veterans, Developmental Disabilities, Mental Health, Crisis Services, and our administrative budget. And so historically, I haven't worked with housing a lot, but that's been changing, and part of this work, I think, that we're doing kind of plays into that. When we started this, I can't believe it's been 2.5 years that we've been doing this work. Vanessa, I think, was very forward-thinking at the time. She was really trying to make sure that this was a staff-led process, and for people like me, that was a really good thing. And the reason why I say that is because on the financial side of things, being able to participate a more what I would look at as a ground level discussion on kind of what are we trying to accomplish, I think I'm learning as much as I'm talking about anything I have to say. And I think that carries enormous benefit for everyone, because as we change and adapt going forward, I think our role in the finance area is going to change. And this will help that along. So What were we doing a couple of years ago? We started out with a group of four teams that were led by staff, and the way that those teams were, leads were developed was just purely because they had an interest in wanting to kind of move up within the organization. That was it. If that was what their interest was, then they were asked to be able to participate. Everyone in the, that indicated that they were wanting that interest were, did choose to participate, so that was really good. And we borrowed from Theory of Change to try to develop our strategic plan. And one of the elements of the Theory of Change is, you know, what is your long-term plan? And then how do you get there? So what we did initially was kind of dreaming a little, I suppose. What are we really trying to accomplish? And what are some of the elements in a very basic way of how we could get there? And then with that, what would our mission be? What are our values? What are we saying when we say we want to do all these things? What our values are? And about a year ago, I think Vanessa came and she presented, and she was showing some of the results of those four teams, of kind of what the missions that they came up with, and the values. And I'm going to jump around a little bit. But this is what we came up with. We were getting feedback about a year ago on the four different proposals that we'd have from the various teams, what the various advisory boards in the community had to think about those ideas. And we got a lot of good feedback. There was some wording that some people didn't like, some felt that we should be more specific, others thought that we should be more simple. I think overwhelmingly it was more of it should be simple, not more complicated. This is what we came up with. The Clark County Department of Community Services supports all people in our community to increase their well-being and economic security through partnerships. And, you know, going back to the Clark County mission and vision, they were actually, or our county was doing this process at the very same time. They were coming up with updating the mission and vision statement, so it was really good timing for us when we were trying to develop ours, that we were always kind of looking back to this, that they were currently working on, is that what are we doing, or what are we wanting to do, and does it fit within what the county is saying we should do? Are we all kind of all in alignment and trying to work on the same page? So we really kind of have to visit this from time to time. Sometimes we get so lost in the weeds of what we're trying to do that it's always good to kind of go back and look at some very simple statements of what is our mission countywide, and are we staying in line with that? It may sound like an easy concept, but with early adopter, it's a very good example in Medicaid expansion, and with us removing our role in outpatient treatment services with substance abuse and the RSN going away, there's been a lot of changes in who is the has the primary responsibility for some of those services. And a lot of that has gone to the managed care organizations, to the state. It's not something that the county is doing. So we have to keep that in mind. You know, we're not, we have lots of things that we have wanted to do in the past, but maybe that's changed. So a lot of going back and looking at a lot of this information. With our vision, we work to create a thriving community where people are valued and have the resources they need to flourish. And we spent a lot of time working on that little statement. And one of the things that I think drove home is that being able to focus on the idea behind people being able to, or in our community, being able to be self-sufficient when possible, and that we're always striving to make that our objective. With our values, we kind of developed those right along the same when we were doing the mission, vision, vision, and values. I happened to be just presenting this about a week ago to one of our executives within Clark County. And one of the things that she mentioned was positivity, and she thought that was really unusual to have as a value statement. She's seen a number of those, and I actually think that that's really important, and it's not unique necessarily, but I think that coming from a perspective of being in government, I think that we need to constantly be looking back at that, because working in government, our leadership changes, elections come and go, and people get elected, and policies change because we're trying to do something better, right? So we always have to be mindful that we have to constantly be working on how are we going to do better. And that's what we need to emulate to all of you and the people that we're trying to serve within our community. So she thought that was good. So, and I hope you do too.
And Brian, I would love to see self-determining, that you're promoting self-determination. To me, that's just the key. So, awesome.
And we had a lot of discussions. I learned a lot personally. Mm-hmm. When it comes to self-determination, I mean, we even got down into the idea of discussing about living income versus living wage. You know, what is the difference between the two? I don't think I appreciated as much the discussion about what the difference is between the two and why it might be important to focus on one or the other. And that makes it more beneficial for you all if you're dealing with finance people in the county. Then, you know, when I start being educated on those sorts of things, it does help when you're trying to talk to somebody who may feel a little more out of touch with what you're doing in the ground level. And I say that only because I used to work at the provider level. And I remember a lot of times when I would talk with people at the county, and not at our county here, but in Multnomah County, and I would often feel that sometimes they were a little out of touch with what we were doing. And so I always try to be mindful of that in my own job. So, one of the things that we have done since a year ago, so when we got those four teams together and we were looking at those top four, mission and vision, and then we voted on that, that was around the time that you guys met about a year ago. And we voted on those. And our kind of next effort that we've been working on in the last year was really taking it one step further and looking at the services that we're actually providing. And with our mission and vision and values, and taking all that into consideration, what would that look like? What are we trying to accomplish? But more specifically, and then kind of how are we getting there? And that is a lot of the work that we've been doing in the last year. We got a lot of feedback when we were going around to the advisory boards that start simple. I think that was a message that was very consistent across a lot of the advisory boards, that don't start out doing something really complicated or you're setting yourselves up to fail. And we're in the middle of kind of developing those outcomes right now. So what you're going to see kind of going forward in this presentation, you're going to see a lot of our ideas still, but they need to be pared down. And the slideshow that you're actually seeing right now that I kind of keep referring to, we're going to be presenting to an all-staff meeting tomorrow. So I just was trying to be transparent so you could kind of see what we're going to be discussing tomorrow at our all-staff. So. But with the outcomes that we've been working on, starting simple, looking at the services that we're already providing, and trying to include metrics that we already collect. And we had a lot of ideas on what we might want to, but again, we're trying to be successful. This is a kind of a huge change of trying to move to an outcomes-based system versus the output. And from a financial perspective, that's a little difficult for me. I wouldn't have thought so, but once I started doing this work, I could see why it would be. It makes it more difficult, because it's not about just looking at a contract and seeing how much money you've spent. No, you've served 100 people, but you're trying to say, well, of those 100 people, what did you really do? Are they going back to jail, or are they in and out of the homeless system? Are they still relying on food assistance? Or they have a disability? Did they ever get a job? You helped them work on vocational services, but are they working? Those are all a lot harder to track. Or they're different. I shouldn't say harder. So we just have to kind of think differently about what we're doing. I can skip through here. Rebecca said you probably didn't need a whole lot of reminders on what the difference is between outcome and outputs. But it's for us, for staff, I think it's very important. Myself included, and we always, I think we need to keep going back to this as we're developing our outcomes to make sure we're not really just creating another output. And then we're looking at the data that we're actually using to be able to kind of back that up. So when we set out on this journey about a year ago, we broke up the department into four different groups. And the idea behind that was is that we could get different staff to kind of go to a group that they specialized in, had to do with more of the expertise that they belonged to really start looking at those outcomes and what those may be. And that's what John is going to be able is going to come up and start talking about. And the four areas we kind of came up with was the household stability, well-being, connected and resilient communities, and economic advancement.
Okay.
So, any questions so far?
This was a way of categorizing, you know, all the programming we have, the measurements we take. You know, the way I thought of it is, you've got the person, the well-being of the person inside the household, your stable household, supported by the economics of your employment, your economic, and hopefully it's advancing, right? And how are you connected to the whole community as a whole? And we're trying to build a resilient community. So in the world of statistics, you know, that which gets measured gets changed, right? So as we take our mission statement of having a resilient community, building well-being. How do we make that happen? Well, we were collecting a lot of data already, right? And we've got lots of measurements going on how many units of subsidized housing there are, how many people are entering jail from homelessness, how do we, we're trying to have programming to reduce that. So we've got household stability outcomes, we've got economic advancement ones, so that we've got programs, we've got contracts, we've got providers that are providing early education. We're having programming to try to increase graduation rates, increase post-secondary enrollment, financial, fiscal kinds of programs that go on. Trying to change economic advancement. Well-being, the person, this was the team that I led out in, in our developmentally disabled program, we've got intervention programs that start from at birth. We've got youth programming to improve leadership and learning for youth. We've got our weatherization program is trying to help the well-being of the person in their home, right? We've got well-being goals when people come out of recovery. How do they have pro-social activities? How do they get involved in bettering their own well-being? We address well-being in our crisis program, nutritional needs in our food system, and then getting more people enrolled in Medicaid helps your well-being, right? Then the other part is the resilient community as a whole. Again, these are metrics we're measuring. Advisory boards such as yourselves, how much participation is happening there. Parks, we talked about substance abuse, some of our prevention programming, and then we also have metrics on transportation. And then ultimately, how does the rubber meet the road, right? makes me think of a pastor friend of mine. He says, what's, you know, his congregation tells him what's the difference between preaching and meddling. Well, when you're preaching the Ten Commandments, you get a lot of amens, amens, and you start to get more specific. You start preaching about tobacco. Well, no, pastor, now you're meddling. So how are we going to meddle with our programs? We can preach the values, we can preach the mission all day long, right? But when the rubber's going to meet the road, how are we going to make changes in our programming? How are we going to make these outcomes happen? So some of the things we're recommending to management that we're going to be talking about tomorrow is, you know, we need better data collection. We need some universal rules on how we collect them. Make sure we're not collecting it 2, 3, 4 times, and that we're getting it from across systems. Got to put these outcomes in our contracts. Our providers need to be accountable for, you know, some of the outcomes we want to achieve. Our strategic plan needs to be regularly updated. We need to be doing this. Once we get to the end of it, start over and do it another 3 years at a time, right? So that was three. Got three more. You know, staff needs to be focused. We need to develop and learn, and we need to celebrate too, of course. And we need to communicate. We need to be transparent as a department. We need to promote collaboration. And then program specifically, we need to work with our providers, make sure that they're trained in these metrics, in these measurements, and then be responsive to the community, because we need to be nimble. Things come up. I mean, we get hit out of the blue often on things we should have seen coming, but when they do come, we need to be responsive. And as government, that's probably, we're probably the one department that needs to be quicker reacting than any other, really. So that's kind of in a nutshell where we want to take our values and put them into practice.
I have a question. You're describing your internal process,
yeah.
And you're
yeah.
talking about having provider groups kind of go along with that in terms of their output rather than just collecting data, but buying into this. What's your plan for your next step to get that to happen with groups that you deal with outside of your group?
Our providers, our agencies, and you know, like Vanessa talked about, we've got, you know, 2/3 of our funding goes into contracts, goes into mm-hmm. providers, and you know, Michael's groups are some of the most outcome-based contracts there are.
So really, the answer to that is contracts. You know,
okay.
we pay for specific outcomes, and you know, we ask the contractor to provide specific services, do specific measurements, show results, and that's what we're paying for.
So, the organizations that the CAB board funds that you're asking for to output on this.
So, absolutely. So our contracts, like how that links to this, is our contracts will reflect our values. It will be consistent with our mission, reflect our values, and the outcomes will also reflect, you know, this vision that John and Ryan just went over in terms of what we're looking for in terms of outcomes for well-being, for stability, for mm-hmm. you name it.
And the report that we provide to you at every meeting, that is based on reports and the contracts that we put in place. So those are some of just a few of the outcomes that are in the contracts that we then bring to you guys to see.
And one of the things you need to understand, so nationally we have a lobbyist, David Bradley, for Community Action Agencies, and he's trying to get the CSBG funding, which is one of the major fundings for CAP agencies. He's trying to get that, what is it called, Michael? Reauthorization.
The reauthorization.
And, but they're asking, where's the outcomes? Where's the outcomes? And so we have to step up as a county and work with our providers statewide and show Congress that we are actually producing, or they'll start cutting some of this funding. So
yeah.
It's happening with all of our programs.
What's interesting about that is it naturally draws you into funding larger agencies that have the capacity to collect the data.
Mm-hmm.
So that we see Treasure has effect, Treasure House, being a small provider locally, is less likely to get funded. And when you seek in your values to increase cultural capacity of organizations or be more flexible or innovative, you're less likely to fund a small, newly emerging nonprofit, say, in providing services than you are to rely on the larger agencies because they have the administrative capacity. And I'm not saying it's wrong, I'm just saying that it does tend to consolidate services within fewer providers.
Well, so let me push back on that. So developmental disability has clear outcomes, employment. How many of the providers? And they fund quite a bit of individuals as consultants, as employees.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And so, and they do some of the best work than some of the larger ones. And so there may be opportunities to have organizations partner up, so you do this part, you do this, so you can achieve the goal differently. But there are some strong small ones that can actually step up and probably do better than some of the bigger ones. So I would say it's depending on, and we're not going to come out with a whole bunch of outcomes, we just need to start off and show some good ones.
So I think that's a learning lesson for the nonprofit community, not necessarily change in your contracting, but that they need to focus more on partnering and fiscal aid.
Well, and another pushback is if we want that measurement, we have to pay for it, and it has to be in the contract.
Yes.
So, the way you get around, if you have a small nonprofit, if you have individuals and stuff like that, you have to pay for them what you're asking them to do. And it's not just delivering the service, it's the way they're delivering the service. So if that includes writing the measurements, doing the quarterly reports, or any other kind of report and stuff like that, that needs to be part of the contract. So that's how, if you're not including it in part of the contract, in my mind, it's not aligned with the outcomes that we're asking.
Right. Well, I think it needs to be in, and I think it's admirable to use it. I just think, in some ways, it contributes to increasing size of nonprofits.
Well, I think one of the things that this whole presentation, I thank all of you for doing it, has really pushed home to me is when we look at the applications, which is a pretty onerous task in itself, it seems that our focus is going to have to become more and more aligned with this, with everything that's, and become more and more aligned with outcome rather than what are you doing.
Mm-hmm.
It's how, and that becomes even for the small groups. And I'm thinking one or two agencies that we haven't even applied for funding. They may be very small. They may be five people they serve. But if their outcomes are strong for those five people, that's what we have to focus on. So I think I really appreciate Vanessa and you guys for what you've done, because this gets bigger every time we hear it, I think.
And the last RFA we had specific questions regarding what are your outcomes.
Right.
And we did ask about outputs because they're also important.
Mm-hmm.
But we did. We've slowly been moving the request for application process to be more outcomes.
I remember that, and that's just so crucial.
So one of the things I think is a good indirect benefit of this process, for some of the services that where maybe like homelessness is a secondary effort and one of our contracts of what we're doing, and maybe we have some good opportunities to be able to revise our expectations that more are aligned with a lot of the funds that you have. And so we're not recreating anything. We're just kind of adding some extra elements to what we're asking a provider to do that helps everyone, and without a lot of extra work. I think that first out of the gate, we're going to be tying a lot of those loose ends with a lot of our local funds that don't have as many requirements as the federal funds, but looking at how we can align those better.
Really is excellent work. Thank you both for coming and sharing with us. I can I make one little extra comment, though, just because I've got everybody's ear for a second? There's a group of folks in North County that really don't have a voice, and that is for folks who have a lot of transportation barriers. And we all know it's there, but those folks don't have a way to easily communicate that. They don't self-identify as that. But I'm telling you, it's a major challenge for folks that are living in rural parts of our community, and I don't want that to be forgotten along the way. So I just wanted to mention that too. But thank you both very much for coming in and sharing with us. We do appreciate it. Good feedback. Thank you, everybody. So real quick, we would like to very much roll forward with our approval of our mission and vision. If we can get past the smell of pepperoni.
Yes, so lunch is here. So this will only take 1 second.
Yes.
So one of the organizational standards is that every 5 years, the advisory board approves, adopts the mission statement, looks at it and adopts it. And the department has already gone through the whole process. We brought you in last year when we were going through the process of doing the mission. So really there's more a formality that we actually have to have an adoption of the mission statement. We gave you one piece of paper that just says the mission, so it was easy to find. This does meet the organizational standards. We made sure that the term economic security was in there, because then it really does tie it back to the Community Action Advisory Board and the CSBG dollars that we receive.
Okay, so we are looking for a motion. Anyone?
I will so move.
Okay.
I'm hungry.
I will
Anyone
second.
Want a second? Great. All in favor? Perfect. Any opposed? Great.
Thank
Our
you so much.
Mission statement is now approved. Let's eat.
So you have a half an hour for lunch. We're not going to bombard you with any more information. There's 5 different pizzas back there. There are some vegetarian versions. There's a couple of salads. There's some vegetables to chew on. There's sodas. There's water. There's still coffee and tea. So please enjoy yourself for a little while. And we'll come back at 12:30.
We're only 1 minute.
I know we're doing good.
Good time.
Hey
Mavis, are you all done with your little plate?
She probably is.
Are you done with your little plate?
I went up.